Oak Session number 13952, Reel 4.
Mr. Symes, Reel 4.
Okay. Well, from the rest area at Grosbeak, we then moved on to the operation, which I think was called Ever Onward, which meant the battle up through the Reichswald. There was one incident there which I would like to record, and that is known as the minefield incident at Panhandle Wood. It had been pouring with rain, and the tracks going up through the Reichswald were liquid mud. And we eventually came out of the wooded area, and there was some open country which went down into a valley before the actual wooded area started again, about 2 miles to our front. But down in the valley there was a wood which was in the shape of a pan with a handle, and so we called it Panhandle Wood. Now, my company commander decided that he would like to know whether there were any Germans in this wood. And so, one of the nights that we were there, he ordered a Sergeant Cousins and 8 men to go out on a observation fighting patrol to see if the Germans were actually in Panhandle. They went out in the dark about midnight, and they were given a compass bearing to get down to the wood because it was quite dark looking down. And they did the job that they had to do, and they left Panhandle about 4 o'clock in the morning to make their way back up to the company position, which I think they must have seen quite clearly looking up with the sky in the background. But unfortunately, on their way back, they walked into an undetected German S minefield, and they were all killed. When it became light, these bodies were only about 200 yards in front of us. And so, quite naturally, my company commander said, "We must get those bodies off that minefield tonight, Sergeant Major, when it gets dark." Well, it just goes to show that under active service conditions, where we'd come a long way up through from Normandy, and things can get a little bit careless. Because the first 2 people onto the minefield when it got dark was my company commander, Major Braithwaite, and a very good friend of mine, Sergeant Mussel. And they went to the first body, and Johnny Braithwaite got out of his shoulders, and Stan got out of the legs, and they lifted the body, and the body was laying on an S mine. So, of course, as soon as they released the body, the S mine went off, exploded, and Stan Marcel, Sergeant Marcel, was wounded in the lower parts of his body, and Johnny Braithwaite was wounded in his chest and his face. We got them back to our company headquarters area, put 2 stretchers on the carrier, and put both of the wounded soldiers on the stretchers, and I made my way back down one of the tracks, which was literally liquid mud, and it was like driving a boat. The tracks of the carrier were pushing the carrier along, and it was yawing from side to side. And it was very upsetting for me because, of course, the movement of the carrier was causing the 2 wounded chaps a considerable amount of pain, and I couldn't do anything about it. I got them back to the field dressing station, and I had to leave them there, and I made my way back up to my company headquarters. Of course, the bodies were got off the minefield in the proper manner, with ropes, with hooks on the end, and they were dragged off, and we got them all off eventually. Sergeant Marcel never rejoined the battalion again, But Johnny Braithwaite rejoined and took up his job as my company commander just after the war finished.
That seems to have been 21st or 22nd of November.
That is right. That is right, yes.
And it was near Gilrath?
Yeah, near Gilrath, yes. Now, the rest of the period after that was really probing areas. We were not coming up against very much resistance from the German. Small pockets here and there until we eventually got to Meersen, where most of the senior people were billeted with Dutch civilians, and the troops were taken out every day, and we were digging in a defensive position in case of a counterattack, which never happened. Well, the next move, really, out of the Dutch area was into Belgium, down to Turnhout, where the battalion was lodged near Liège, because of the German breakout through the Ardennes. The object of us being there was that it had been circulated to us that lots of Germans were coming into the area, breaking into the area in American uniforms. And so we were doing guard duties on various bridges and approach roads into that area.
Sounds like a recipe to open fire
on anything that moved,
American
really.
Allies.
On anybody that moved, really, if they were aggressive. They certainly had to come openly over the bridge or down the road to show themselves. If they were creeping about, then they were shot at. Then we were issued with white overall clothing and were taken up to the snows of the Ardennes. In case the Americans couldn't hold the Germans at Gascogne, we were the next line of resistance had they broken through from that area. But as it happened, we were never brought into action in that area. Well, then from there we moved back to Nijmegen again, in the Cleve and Bedburg area, because the Germans had pulled the plug out of the Rhinedike and had flooded all that area. And we were put into buffaloes and taken across the flooded areas to one of the Rhinedikes, where there was had been a crossroads. As I explained to you earlier, on most of the Rhine dikes there's a road going across the top, and in this particular area that we went to, there was a little village which had been spread over the Rhine dike, with one of the houses on the Rhine dike itself. And in this house we had our company headquarters. When we moved in, I forget the unit we were taking over from, but I remember going around to the defensive areas with my company commander, and the commander of the unit that we were relieving said, it's pretty quiet around here, he said. We don't shell the Germans and they don't shell us. So, in other words, if you behave yourself, then it'll be fairly good here. So off he went in the buffaloes back to the Nijmegen area, and the rest of the day was quiet, but the next morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning, we suffered a terrific bombardment with very small mortars. They came in on the crossroads, they hit our company headquarters and the immediate surrounding areas, and it lasted for about 20 minutes. Quite horrific. And then nothing. Absolutely dead quiet. Well, if I explain the defensive position that we had our company headquarters on the crossroads, and about 1,000 yards to our left, we had a section, which was a flank section, and they were overlooking the Rhine, the main river of the Rhine. And then we had another section, likewise, about 500 yards to the right of us down the Rhine Dyke. Well, as I say, we had this small mortar attack in the morning, and we got our heads down about midnight, and about 2 o'clock in the morning, we suffered a terrible bombardment with really heavy mortars. It shook everything, and it was quite frightening, and that lasted for about a half an hour. Well, when it became light, I sent a section up to the left flank to make contact with our left flank section that was out on the flank, and there was nobody there. And what had happened, that during this heavy bombardment that we'd had, the Germans had come across the Rhine, captured the whole of that section, and taken them back as prisoners of war. And it is peculiar, well, not peculiar, but it's something which I must say, that the sergeant who had the poison hand at Hatteren and went back to Nijmegen, it was his section. And I've talked to him about this incident since the war has finished. And his caustic remark is, yeah, I expect all the so-and-sos was bloody asleep. But anyway, they took them all as prisoners of war. And, of course, we never saw them again. That was quite an incident on the Milligan Islands.
Was that in February 45?
That was February, yes.
Is that what you've got down here as Burghofel Battle?
Yeah, that's right.
So that was 13th and 15th of February.
13th and 14th of February, that's right. Burghof, yeah, the Burghof Battle. I would like, with your permission, to go back to the 22nd of January, because there is one battle which I have missed out.
Yes.
And that is the battle for Waldenrath and Put, which took place on the 22nd of January.
Where are they?
Pardon?
Where are these places?
They're in Germany. We're in Germany now.
Is this in the Reichswald?
Outside of the Reichswald. It was very, very cold. The ground was frozen solid. And this was to be an all-armoured attack, with the troops carried in tanks that had their turrets removed. And before the attack, something was going down that we'd not heard of before, and it was called the Canadian Mattress, which was a layout where hundreds of mortar bombs were set off at the press of one button. And it was thought that attacking troops should be at least 1 mile away from the point of impact. When we approached the start line to this battle, we were going up a hill, and I had a Sherman tank in front of me and another one behind me, and you can imagine going up to a start line, it was all stop-go. And it was a bit frightening to see the tank in front of me sliding on the ice on the roads, and I visualized myself being squashed between the one coming towards me and the one behind me. But fortunately, the driver realized the situation and put a lock on the tank and drove the rear of it into the bank of the road that we were traveling on. And when we started the attack, it was quite thrilling. I was driving my company carrier with my company commander aboard, and the company was in armored vehicles, and our supporting tanks, and we were in open agricultural country which stretched before us about a mile and a half or 2 miles to the first village of Waldenrath. And when the time of attack came, then we all set off, going like the very devil over the frozen ground until we arrived at Waldenrath. And I think this was the nearest that I ever had to being killed, because there was a vehicle in front of me with one of the company commanders in it, another carrier. And as we approached Waldenrath, I could see in front of this carrier that there was the tracks were crossing, and there was a little bit of an island in the road with an old farm cart wheel in the middle. I think had I been leading, I would probably have gone through the island, I don't know, but the carrier in front of me did, and it was fixed to a mine, and the carrier just lifted off the ground in front of me, and the driver and the company commander was killed. After the attack on Waldenrath, the next village, just up the road, was Put. And we were able to go through Waldenrath, and we captured Put as well. And it surprised us with the horrible stories that we'd had of the Canadian mattress that nothing could live. When we arrived at Waldenrath, there were still Germans that came up out of the holes in the ground and they were ready to fight. But they didn't put up much resistance, and we had a fairly easy ride on that one. Right, we move on
to
the crossing of the Rhine.
Yes.
Reese. Well, we were all, I remember we were all lined up on the Rhine bank, ready for crossing the River Rhine over to a place called Milligen. The battalion with other supporting troops were lined up along the River Rhine in preparation for the crossing of the Rhine to attack on the other side a little town called Milligen. We were to cross on buffaloes. Since the country was fairly open, there was a continual smoke screen going down between us and Milligen, which was covering the Rhine. And it was at this stage that Mr. Churchill came along in a scout car. He was rather a rotund gentleman, and so he couldn't get down in the scout car, but he was sat on the entrance at the top. And he came along with his cigar in his hand and waving to us all. There was a little bit of shelling going on at the time, but it certainly gave us quite a lift to see this dear old gentleman showing himself like that. There was another upsetting thing for me, because I am now due for 1 week's leave in the UK. My name had come up. And I said to my company commander, what should I do? I'm due for leave. So he said, well, I would like you to cross the Rhine with this sergeant major, and after the battle at Milligen, then you can go. I don't think I could quite explain my mental attitude of going into action, knowing that when it was finished, if I had survived, that I was going home to see my family. However, I did survive it, and this is the first time that I've ever done any looting. But there was a shop in Milligen that had some beautiful suitcases, and so I borrowed one of those, and they had some silk tablecloths and things like that, and I borrowed some of those, and I was able to get them home, and I presented them to my mother. Which meant that I missed the next few actions, and I returned.
But what was the actual Rhine crossing like, as you saw it?
Oh, yes, well, We didn't come up against very much resistance, but it certainly makes the hairs on the back of your head stand up when you are traveling in a buffalo tank on water, approaching a town on the banks of the Rhine that you've been told is quite heavily defended, when you're expecting all hell to break loose at any minute. But in actual fact, it didn't. There was some street fighting when we arrived, and we were able to take up a defensive position on the outskirts of the town.
And was there an actual battle at Millingen the next day?
Yes. It was a battle of expanding the bridgehead.
Did you take part in that?
No, I left. I left then. Now, I didn't... I missed the battle at Hengelo, but I know all about that. And I came back when the battalion were at Kloppenburg.
What were you told about the battle at Hengelo? This was the 1st of April.
This was...
The 1st of April.
Yeah. 1st of April, that's right. Well, first I should explain that the battle for Hengelo was fought by the 7th Hampshires and the 4th Battalion of the Dorsetshire Regiment. The approach was through Enschede, and the 7th Hamps were on the south side of the town. Our carriers went up on the east side, and with the Dorsets came down through the village with the intent of driving any German forces that happened to be there onto the guns of the 7th Battalion. But it was not very heavily defended, and there was not much of a battle there, and the battalions were fated by the local people. I must say that after the war, the 4th Dorsets were invited back quinquennially to Hengelo for the celebrations of their liberation, but the 7th Hampshires were not considered until my friend, who was a sergeant with me who lived in Holland, made contact with the burgomasters and staff at the town hall at Hengelo and said, come on, there were two battalions involved in your liberation. One was the Dorsets and one was the Hampshires. We were then invited over, and we have been over quinquennially for the last 15 years, and there's a great celebration. So that was the Battle of Hengelo. I came back just as the Battle of Kloppenburg was finishing.
That was the 13th of April.
That was the 13th of April. And the thing that I remember about that is that there were hundreds and, I suppose, thousands of German marks, that was paper money, blowing up and down the main street where the attackers had fought house by house and gone into the bank and blown up the safe, and all the German marks have been blown out and they're blowing up and down. But I believe that Germany had very high inflation, so you were talking about 1,000 and 100,000 mark notes blowing up and down the village. We moved on from there, and resistance then was getting weaker. We were coming up against the, I think they're called the Volkstrommers, the German Home Guard, the more elderly people. But one of the things that the Germans were doing at that time were putting landmines in the roads and blowing them up, and making terrific craters that had to be bridged before the before we could move forward. Well, things were beginning to slow down by this time. We were, as I say, we were meeting weaker resistance, and we were moving forward. And it must have been when we were in the area of Nuremberg. We arrived there on the 3rd of May, and it was on the 4th of May that rumours began to pass among the troops that there was to be peace, that the Germans had had surrendered. It was late on the evening of the 4th that it was confirmed to us, and the brigadier sent around orders that all at midnight all parachute flares and Very pistols, anything that gave a light in the sky, should be fired. So there was quite a firework party which went off at midnight on the 4th of May.
This was at Nuremberg?
Yes, in the area of Nuremberg.
What was the relationship with the German civilians that you were seeing by now?
Well, we were not allowed to fraternize.
Did you?
The only contact that I remember having was, and it must have been around about the. It was not far away from the Belsen concentration camp, and the local burgomaster came out of the little town with a white flag to surrender the town to our colonel. I didn't have any contact, but I saw the burgomaster come out. He was carrying the white flag because we were the leading company on the advance at that time. But we never went into the town to have any conversation at all with the German people. And on our first German town that we went into, just after the war finished, which was Vincennes near the Lüneburg Heath, and there was a clampdown on fraternization. We're not allowed to have anything to do with the German people at all.
Did people obey the no fraternization order?
I have to say that it was very difficult to control your individual soldier, because there were young women walking around the area that were quite happy to flirt with the British soldier. We had to have little groups. I had to make up about 10 or 15 sort of military policemen, if you like, to patrol the area during the day, because my company commander and the CO were very strict on this non-fraternization.
Do you think the non-fraternization order was correct or incorrect?
I suppose in hindsight I would say it was incorrect, because if an order is given and it cannot be 100% complied with, then there isn't any point in giving the order. And unless you lock young soldiers up in their rooms at night, then it is very difficult to stop them from getting out. Especially when there's a lot of young ladies walking up and down. We couldn't stop their free passage up and down the roads, because they would have needed to have passed our company billets